We're holding the top line of Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph. Well, we learned yesterday about the situation with the Shir Shoyim, where because the Edim came late on Rosh Hashanah, they weren't sure what to do with the Shir Shoyim. And we have two different opinions. Did they not say one at all by the Talmud Shavuot Arba'im? Did they say the one of weekday instead of, as it turns out, they should have said the one of Yom Tov? And that led us into a little bit of discussion about the Shir Shoyim of Rosh Hashanah. So now let's get into a little discussion about, in general, every day of the week we say Shir Shoyim. What do each of them symbolize? Tanya, we learn it a bit. I said, Yehuda Omrim Mishum Rav Akiva, Barishin Mahoyu Omrim. What would the Levim sing on the first day of the week, on Sunday in the Beis Mikdash, which we do, and we do in davening? La Shema Oretzim Loya, Kapitel Chav Dalet of Tehillim. And why? Which Hashem Oretzim Loya means the world and all its fullness belongs to Hashem. Al Shem Shekona, because that represents that Hashem acquired, meaning Hashem made, and so to speak, got them by acquisition, like he made them, and therefore they belong to him, v'hikna, and he was machne the world to those who live in it, the shalit ba'olamai, and Hashem is the ruler of his world. Even after he's machne, don't think it means that he delegated the world to us and he doesn't have it to do. He still has to do. So la shema oretzim loya, the world and all its fullness still belongs to Hashem. Good morning, Ali. And Marashah explains, in particular, you have, so la shema oretzim loya refers to the fact that Hashem is the king. Etc. Represents the person for the kind of person for whom Hashem made the world. So the kind about whom we say about whom we can say that Hashem was machne the world to them. And then it finishes off Miza Malach HaKavod, Hashem is the giver, etc., which represents the fact that Hashem is the ruler of the world. So that's the Shir Shoyim for Sunday. Vasheni Mahayoimrim on Monday said, Godol Hashem Mahul Moed, Kapitel Memches. Hashem is great and very praised. Hashem Shechilik Maisa, the year of the Kenu Hav Kodesh, as the passage continues. Hashem Shechilik Maisa, because on that day Hashem started dividing up his creatures. He divided El Yonim from Tachtonim, and then Hashem, so to speak, took Shamayim for himself, as like we have the year of the Kenu Hav Kodesh, that Hashem dwells in the city of Yerushalayim, in the same way Hashem dwells in Shamayim, and he ruled over them. So therefore, so that's capital. So that's the capital for Monday. On Tuesday, what do they say? The king Yitzavadas Keo, capital Pebes. Hashem stands in the congregation of in the congregation of Hashem. Hashem Shigila Eretz B'Chochmaseh, because on that day, on Tuesday, is when Hashem revealed the world with his chokhmah, revealed the land rather with his chokhmah. The land was covered with water, and Hashem told it to be revealed. The hechin teva ladosai, and he prepared teva, which means the settled world, the civilized world, for his ada, for the Jewish people who are whose job it is to reveal the course in the world. So that's the kapit. So the kim nitzavadas kel, the kerav el kim yishpoit. Marshall also adds that therefore we tell the continuation of the kapitol as we warn the dayanim to judge fairly, lo yodu v'lo yavinu b'chasheches halacho, etc. Representing, do what you're supposed to do in order to prevent that there shouldn't be a marble, the world shouldn't have to be covered with water again. So that's Tuesday. On Wednesday, they said Kapitel Tzadik Dalad, which begins Kel Mekomis Hashem. Hashem is a god of vengeance. Al Shem Shebaruch Chama Olavana, because on Wednesday Hashem created the sun and moon, and people unfortunately worship them. But also be part of Me'evdehen. In the future, Hashem will pay back. Hashem will punish those who worship those bodies. On Thursday, the Levim and the Beis Mikdash, and we in davening say Haninu le'kimu zeinu, capital Pei Aleph. Al Shem shebara oifus bedogim l'shabeach l'shmoi. Because on Thursday, Hashem created the birds and the fish and to praise His name. Meaning, Rashi says every time when people see all kinds of different birds, they have such beautiful, colorful feathers, etc. So the people praise Hashem for that. So therefore, so that belongs on Thursday. On Friday, they would say Kapitel Tzadik Gimel, which begins Hashem Moloch Geirus Lavish. Hashem has ruled. He's dressed himself in grandeur and greatness. Hashem shegomer malachta, because on Friday Hashem finished his malacha, malach alayim, and then he ruled over everything that he created. Vashvi, how you omen mizmer shilei yom Shabbos. On Shabbos, they would say mizmer shilei yom Shabbos, typical tzaddik beis, which represents the yom shekolo Shabbos, the day in the future when which will be all Shabbos. Meaning Rashi describes, as we're going to talk about soon in the Gemara, that there's going to be a time in the world when the world is going to be chorev ve'ein adam. Rashi says it's going to be destroyed with nobody in it. We'll get to that point soon, what that actually means. And therefore, so there's no malacha at that time. So therefore, it's like a permanent Shabbos. And therefore, Mizmer Shadir Shabbos represents that ultimate Shabbos. So that's the reasons. So that's the reasons Rabbi Yehuda brings in the name of Rabbi Akiva for the seven Shoshana Yoms. However, Amar Rabbi Nechemia, but Rabbi Nechemia says, "Ma ro chachamim l'chalaku, ma ro Rabbi Akiva l'chalak ben akrokim alalu." Why is Rabbi Akiva making a distinction between the first six and the seventh one? Namely, the first six all refer to things that Hashem did during Ma'aseh Bereishis. So they were all referring to things that Hashem did in the past. He created the world, he separated heaven, and he separated the waters above from the water below, etc., etc. And all of a sudden, by Shabbos, you're saying it's not for the fact that Hashem rested on Shabbos on the seventh day, but for the fact that in the future there will be a rest from Malacha. So why do that? Ella, so Rabbi Nechemia goes over the whole list again. Varishin Shekhana Vehikna Veshalach Ba'ilamai. Again, the first day is Hashem acquired the world and made us acquire it. In order to live in it and use it for other course, the shalat by lama, and he rules over his world. Vasheni shechilik ma'isav malach aleihem. The second day, he separated his works, the upper water from the lower water, and ruled over them. Vashlishi shegila eretz b'chachmasa v'heichin tevel adasai. The one for Tuesday is that he revealed the dry land with his chachma and prepared the world for his Ada, for the Jewish people to live on. On Wednesday is that he created the sun and moon will also be part of day, and in the future he'll punish those who worship them. On Thursday he created, we have a shir shel yom because he created the birds and the fish to praise his name. On Friday it's that Hashem finished all of his works and ruled over all of them. And the one for Shabbos is not like Rabbi Yehuda had said in the name of Rabbi Akiva, because in the future there'll be a Shabbos, but because at the end of Ma'aseh Bereishis, Hashem rested. Now, an interesting point is why Rabbi Nechemia needs to repeat the whole thing. Why didn't you just say that the seventh one is only? So the pashtus, of course, you could say. I mean, he's saying you, Rabbi Yehuda, repeated in the name of Rabbi Akiva this whole statement. I want to correct it and say that the end of it is like that, and therefore I'm going to correct and tell you how the whole thing was said. However, there is actually there's a sefer of Shiloh Satrovus called Knesset Yechezkel, where he at the end he has a couple of short Shiloh Satrovus and Kedushim and Gemara, and he mentions this one. And he explains, if you notice, also in Rabbi Nechemia's rendition of it, he doesn't say each time in Rabbi Yehuda's, you have each time Al Shem, Lashem Aritzabalay Al Shem Shekona Vehikna, Basheni God Lashem Molamoid Al Shem Shechilik Ma'aseh, etc. Except for Shabbos, it just says L'Yom Shekola Shabbos. Rabbi Nechemia does exactly the other way around. He does. There's no Al Shem for the first six, and there's an Al Shem for the seventh. So he explains the machlokas is actually when these kapitlach tilim, is it that David originally composed them having in mind that they're going to be used for the days of the week? So in other words, when David composed kapitlach daled, he had in mind al shame, that he has in mind that Hashem created the world kana v'hikna v'shalat v'olamay, and therefore that it would be an appropriate shir shel yom for Sunday, and the same thing kapitel memches for Monday and so forth. So therefore, the al shames go on that. Then when it comes to mizmer shir yom Shabbos, we're saying that he wrote it as the kapitel for Shabbos, but not al shame, but not al shame. The what's going to be lost love, but just he wrote it just al shem the Shabbos, the weekly Shabbos, but not al shem the Shabbos that's going to be in the future. Whereas Rabbi Nechemia says no, all it is when the Levim we're looking for, we need a song to sing by the Korbanos on Sunday, because the Torah tells us we have to sing by the Korbanos, which song should we use? And they looked around and found that Kapitel Chof Dalad suits the purpose. And the same thing, Kapitel Mem Ches for Monday, and so on and so forth. So it's not al shame. These Kapitlach were not written with those days of the week in mind. They were just written, they're written for other purposes, and the Levium found that they would be appropriate for these. And then, according to that, the sixth, the seventh one is indeed Al Shem Shashabbos, because David wrote Mizmer Shili Yom Shabbos. He put right there in the caption that it's for the Shabbos day because Hashem rested on Shabbos. Okay, so the Gemara says we come mifligi v'dirav katina. Now their machloikas is actually the machloikas is actually regarding what Rav Katina says. So
we have Rav Nechemiah explain that the reason why he's differing with Rabbi Akiva about Shabbos, particularly about Mizmer Shilem and Shabbos, is because Rabbi Akiva is being inconsistent. He's making that one refer to the future and all the other ones refer to the past. So the Gemara explains that they have a more fundamental machlokas between them that what is that Yom Shekulei Shabbos? Vidur of Katina regarding what Rav Katina said. The Amr of Katina, Shita Alpha Shni Habe Alma, the world that as we know it is going to last for 6,000 years. The Chad Charuv, and then there's going to be 1,000 years of Charuv. Literally, Charuv means destruction. So, like we said before, Rashi quoted, we said before that Rashi says that there's going to be a period of time when the world is Charuv and there's no people in it. Mind you, the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, it's not completely true, there's going to be no people in it. The Tzaddikim are still going to be there, and then the Gemara describes how, metaphorically, how Hashem is going to make them wings, and they're going to float on the water. There's of course many explanations about it. In particular, there's many places in Chassidus where it talks about it, and it talks about the idea that this choruv refers to, in other words, the world is going to be on a completely different level. It's going to be choruv, destroyed, relative to the way now we expect the world to work a certain way. And there's going to come a time when it's going to be when the whole nature, the whole teva of the world is going to be changed, and we describe that as choruv. There's even one place, there's a mimer of the Rebbe Marash that talks about also the word choruv refers to, he relates it choruvin as in caravs. We're going to learn in Masech HaTainis, we're going to learn in a few weeks, Bez Hashem, about Rav Chanina ben Dosa, who was a tremendous tzaddik. He was the tzaddik adur, and the whole world was sustained in his schus, and he himself, he and his family lived off a cav of choruvin, of caravs, from Erev Shabbos to Erev Shabbos. That's how little they had. So the Rebbe Marash explains that choruv represents a very, very high level of gilui elokus, so much that to give tremendous shefa to the whole world. So Rav Chanina ben Dosa, in his times, he being the tzaddik ador, he was bringing down that choruv for the whole world. But it's such a high thing that for him himself, it couldn't come out the gilui. Because if for him it came out the gully, it would be the kind of thing where the world really would be destroyed because the world couldn't take such a thing. So therefore, he himself had to have only very bitzimtzum. He had to have only a bare amount of gashmis. Meanwhile, for everybody else who's not on his level, it was able to come down the gully as tremendous goodness and gashmis. Anyway, the point is that he says that choruv or the schad choruv over here represents a tremendous outpouring of elokus. So we're saying that there's going to be that. So therefore, according to that, then it means, so you have the 6,000 years, each of them represents one of the 6 days of the week, and the 7,000, when it's going to be choruv, represents Shabbos. So therefore, so it's appropriate to have a kapitel tilim that talks about that. So how do we know 1,000? The pasuk says Hashem will be exalted alone on that day. So alone, in other words, implying there's not going to be a world I mean, even now we know, of course, Einod Milavadei, but that's only from the point of view of Das Elyon, from the point of view of Das Tachton, from our own point of view, it looks like the world runs on its own. It's not going to be that way. So therefore, Hashem will be levadoi by yoimahu on that yoim, and we know that a yoim of Hashem, that a day of Hashem, is 1,000 years. Omer Abaya, or Abaya Omer, but Abaya says no, it's not 1,000, but trei charuv. There's going to be 2,000 years of that. As the pasuk says, Hashem will make us alive throughout the 2 days, and again, 2 days means 2,000 years. So again, it means that. That for 2,000 years you'll have this world is choruv. So in particular, there's actually a sicha in Chelek Zayin where the Rebbe talks about in a different context, the Machlokas, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, in a different context, what's going to happen with the wild animals, La'asid Lavai? Are they going to disappear or are they going to be tamed and not harm anymore? And the Rebbe talks about, according to Abayas, Terei Charuv over here, we would say that there's going to be 1,000 when they're not going to harm and another 1,000 when they're going to completely disappear, representing, in other words, two stages in the world becoming higher and closer to Elikos. The point is, in other words, that according to Rav Katina, you have 1,000 years of Charuv, therefore it's appropriate to have a Mizmer Shir Yom HaShabbos for the Yom Shekhov HaShabbos, because it's going to be one Yom, one of Hashem's days of 1,000 years. Whereas if you say like Abaya, that's 2,000, 2,000 is 2 days. So then you don't have a Yom Shekhov HaShabbos, you have Yomayim Shekhov HaShabbos. So then it's not appropriate to talk about, so then it's not appropriate to have a Mizmer Shir Yom HaShabbos representing that. So therefore, that would bring us to Rav Nechemia's opinion that Mizmer Shir Yom HaShabbos represents the weekly Shabbos that we have now, not the future Shabbos, which according to Abaya is going to be 2,000 years rather than 1,000. Okay, so that's the reasons for the Shir Shor Yoyims for the different days of the week. Next, the Gemara continues, the Musfe de Shabbos Mahayu Oymrim, in the Beis Mikdash. So what Shir Shor Yoyim did the Levim say together with the Musaf of Shabbos? The Mizmer Shir Yom HaShabbos that we just said was for the Tamid Shal Shachar. Now, what about the Korban Musaf? Amar of Onan Bar Rava, Amar Rav Haziv Loch. They would sing the Shira of Hazinu, and they divided it into six sections where the acronym of them is the words Haziv Loch. So the first one begins Hazinu, the second one begins Zachor Yomosolam. And all the other ones, you have different opinions among the Rishonim where exactly you divide them. Rashi says the third one is Yaakivehu, which is in fact how we do it in Shul. The Gemara is going to say in a second that the same breaks are used in Shul. The fourth one, Vayara Hashem Vayinot, which is also the same. Then you have the Lamed and the Chof. Rashi says Alulei Kas Oyev Ogur and Ki Yodin Hashem Amai. Tosus brings a different one. From Tosus brings a couple of different ones from Masech HaSofrim and from Rabbi Hananel. The Rambam brings yet another one. Our Minag is like the Rambam's division. So Rashi explains actually that what you have is they're more or less of equal length. You have the first four, Rashi says, are six psukim each, and they're actually Rashi says the first three are six psukim each, and then afterwards eight psukim each. Actually, if you count the psukim according to Rashi's divisions, you have it slightly different. There's one of them that's nine instead of eight. But anyway, the ones that we have nowadays are somewhat different. The Rambam in particular has the fifth aliyah run. The fifth aliyah runs to about 13 psukim, and the sixth aliyah runs to is only four psukim. Anyway, so those are the divisions. So each week they would do one of those in the each week they would do on the Musaf of Shabbos, they would do one of those in the Beis Mikdash. But Amar of Chanan Bar Rava, Amar Rab, Kederach Shachaluchim Kan. The same divisions that are used in the Beis Mikdash are the same divisions that are used in Shul for the first six aliyahs. And then the seventh aliyah is the psukim after the Shira of Ayyavai Moshe Vaydaber, etc. So those were the Shir Shor Yoyims for the Musaf of Shabbos. There's a sicha in Chelek Chav Dalet where the Rebbe talks about why Dafka Shira Sazinu. I mean, okay, it's a Shira, but a lot of it talks about how Hashem is going to punish the Jewish people for their Averis and so on and so forth. Why is that appropriate for Shabbos? And the gist of the answer is that ultimately Shira Sazinu is not so much about the punishment. I mean, it contains that as well, but ultimately it's about how Hashem leads the Jewish people towards the Geula Amitis Vashlema, how Hashem leads us to doing tshuva and takes us out of and taking us out of Golus. Even the parts of it that seem negative are all part of a Shira, which a Shira, after all, is something happy. So therefore, in other words, you have that, and especially, in fact, the Rebbe goes and then explains that especially according to the Rambam, it comes out there's no one aliyah that's only bad. Every one has some good in it as well. According to Rashi, maybe not, but according to the Rambam's divisions, which is what we use nowadays for the aliyahs, every one of them includes some good. And then the Rebbe goes on to explain that actually what it is each of the six divisions of Parshas Hazinu that we're dealing with over here, each of them reflects the theme of one of the six kapitlach that we said that they do during the week. So the first part, Hazinu Hashemayim Vadabera, reflects the theme of La Shema Aretz Emloya. The second one, Zechor Yemos Olam, reflects the theme of the second one, Gadol Hashem Mehula Ma'od. For example, on the second Aliyah, we talk about how Hashem split up the nations and made that there are 70 nations in the world corresponding to the Jewish people. That reflects the theme of Monday of Hashem splitting the waters apart, and so on and so forth, going through Hazinu. So each one of them, so even, for example, we said before, there's a chapitel for Wednesday that talks about Kel Mekamas Hashem, that Hashem eventually will punish those who worship the sun and the moon and the other idols. But even that, it's not wholly negative. It's something positive. It's a step on the road to Geula. And therefore, all of those are like one unit. And then on Shabbos, then we have Hazinu, which also reflects those themes. Next, the Gemara continues. But Mincha said to Shabbos and Maha Yoyrim, what would they do by Mincha, by the Talmud Traben HaBayim on Shabbos? What capital would they sing then? Now, by the way, on the weekdays, you just have, we said before, that you do the same capital in the morning as in the afternoon. But Shabbos, the Gemara is assuming that we're going to do something different. So, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Oz Yoshu, Umi Kamecha V'Oz Yoshu. They did Oz Yoshu, that we say every day in davening, the Shir Sayan, the first half of it, Mi Kamecha, which is the second half of it, and Oz Yashir, which is the one, the Shira of the Be'er, in Parashas Chukas, that the Jewish people sang about the well of Miriam. So they have the question, Hani Kula B'chad Shabbos Ha'amri Lahu, do we mean that they did all three of those every Shabbos? Or do we mean Kol Shabbos of a Shabbos Ha'amri Chad? Do we mean that the first Shabbos they would do the first half of Oz Yashir, until Tzolalu Kaiferes Mai Madirim, the second Shabbos they would do from Micha Moicha until the end of that Shira, and the third Shabbos they would do Oz Yashir Moshe, the Shira Oz Yashir Yisrael, the Shira of the Be'er. So is it like that? So is it that they did it all of them every Shabbos, or each one on a different Shabbos, and then they rotated through three Shabbosim? Toshma, with a proof, the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Amar Rav Yosi, Ad Shorishona Emeres Achas, while they're doing the first one, one time through, Shnia Chazeres Shtayim, the second one that they're doing by Mincha, they're repeating through twice. In other words, we said Hazinu is six parts, so it takes them six Shabbosim to go through Hazinu. This was saying that there's only three parts, so they, and it only takes three of them to go through. Shema Mina Kol Shabbos of a Shabbos Amri Chad. So you see that every Shabbos they said only one Shema Mina. Okay, so that proves it. So the first Shabbos they would say the first section of Hazinu and the first half of the Shira Sayyam. The second week they'd be doing the second section of Hazinu, the second Aliyah of Hazinu, and the second part of the Shira Sayyam, beginning with Micha Moicha. And the third week they'd be doing the third Aliyah of Hazinu, and along with it they'd be doing the Shira Sabe'er. And then the fourth week they're doing the fourth Aliyah of Hazinu, and they're going back to Oz Yashir and so forth. So they go through the Shiras in Mincha twice as fast as they go through the Shiras of Hazinu. And Marsha points out the idea is Shabbos being a higher day, you want to have that they're using Shiras from the Torah. Whereas on the weekdays, which are on a lower level, those they can use Shiras that were composed by David HaMelech. Also, when we said before about Rav Katina and Abaya, about Chad Charuv and Trey Charuv and all that, so why isn't Rav Akiva bothered by the question of Rav Nechemiah that what's the difference between Shabbos and the weekdays? Why do the weekdays all refer to the past and the one for Shabbos refers to the future? There's a sicha where that everyone's pointed out. Rabbi Akiva would say, listen, Shabbos is higher than time, so it doesn't really matter. The past Shabbos and the future Shabbos is all the same thing. Okay, so that ends the discussion about the Shir Shoyim. Next, we said in the Mishnah that Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai had made a takana our Mishnah had talked about the takana of Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai that after the Churban, Eidei Achodesh can come all day because there's no Churban and no Shir to be messed up. We said also in the previous Mishnah, we also mentioned that Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai made a takana that you can blow shofar in the first Mishnah of our Perek, that Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai made a takana after the Churban that you can blow shofar in Yavne. So now let's talk about how the Sanhedrin wind up in Yavne in the first place. So Amar of Yehuda Ba'idi, Amar of Yechanan, Esem Asois Nosa Shechina, there were 10 movements, 10 stages in the journey that the Shechina went through when it left the Beis Mikdash, at the end of the first Beis Mikdash, Mikroi, and we know those from Sukkim. In other words, the idea is when at some point Hashem removed his Shechina from the Beis HaMikdash. If it hadn't been for that, the Goyim never could have conquered and destroyed it. But Hashem left in stages, like he's unwilling to leave, and he wants to give the Jewish people more and more of a chance to leave. There's also the idea there's 10 levels of Kedusha, so therefore, as each one went away, then the Shechina went away further and further. So we know that from, we're going to analyze Pesukim, and we're going to see how there were those 10 stages. Uknegdan, Golsa, Sanhedrin, Megemara. Corresponding to those, when the Sanhedrin went into Golos, they also went through stages that we don't know from Pesukim, but that we know only from Torah Shabbat. On the face of it, the places where we're talking about the Shechina is the first Beis HaMikdash, and the Sanhedrin is at the end and after the second Beis HaMikdash, although Marsha points out that it seems maybe that we're talking about also the Sanhedrin going into Golos, maybe not to the exact same places, but at least that there was some Golos of the Sanhedrin after the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. If nothing else, they went into Golos and Babel. So maybe you also had 10 stages there. So, where do we see from Pesukim that the Shechina left the Beis HaMikdash in 10 stages? So the stages are as follows. Mikaporas the Kruv, from the Kaporas, where originally the Shechina was above the Kaporas, and that's where it spoke to Moshe, the Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu from there, moved to the Kruv. Now you have the Kruv, we're not talking about the Kruvim that were on the Oreb. We've learned before that in the Beis HaMikdash, besides the kruvim that were on top of the oren, attached to the kaporis, actually of one piece with the kaporis, besides that, there were two big, oversized kruvim made out of wood, plated with gold, that stood on the floor of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, one on each side of the oren, and with their wings they covered over the kruvim and the oren itself. So first, the Shechina moved the kaporis to kruv, from the kaporis to one of those kruvim. Only kruv the kruv, and then from one kruv to the other kruv, Agoris Habach takes that out. And in fact, if you do, you're going to have 11, so you have to take that out. Only kruv the miftan. Then the Shechina moved from the kruv to from one of these big kruvim to the threshold of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Only miftan, or maybe the threshold of the heichal. Only miftan the chotzer, and then from there to the chotzer of the Beis HaMikdash, to the Azara, from the Chotzer to Mizbeach, from there to the Mizbeach HaChitzen, that is, from the Mizbeach LaGag, from there to the roof of the Heichel. Hagoyes HaGruv flips a few of those around because it makes more sense that it first went to the roof of the Heichel, and then from there to the Chotzer, it's going progressively outward. Why would it go backwards to the roof of the Heichel? Okay, from the Gag LaChoyma, from the roof it went to the wall of the Azara. From there to the city of Yerushalayim, from there to the mountain, meaning Har HaZeisim, from there it went to the Midbar, and from the desert, the Shechina went and sat and remained in its place, meaning in Shemayim. Shenema, the pasuk says, Hashem says many years ago through the Navi Hosea, Eilech Oshuva al Makaymi, let me go return to my place. So in other words, the Navi is saying, Hosea lived a few hundred years before the Churban, but he's saying, the Nevuah, that there's going to come a point where Hashem's Shechina is going to return to its place in Shemayim. Mind you, of course, you know, we learn in Basi the Gani that the real place is your Shechina with Achtonim Hosea, and our job is to bring it back down here on earth. But like we said before, Hashem is, so to speak, personal place is in Shemayim. He wants us to make the world. We did it with Achtonim, and if not, then Shemayim is the appropriate place for him. Okay, so let's go through each of those. Mikaporis lekruv, mikruv lekruv, mikruv lemiftan. Where do we see that the Shechina was originally on the Kaporis and then moved to the Kruv, and from there moved to the threshold? So dechtiv, like this. First you have when the Mishkan was built, Hashem says to Moshe, v'nei adti l'chasham, I will make my appointment with you over there in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. V'dibarti itchom al ha-kaporis, I will speak with you from above the kaporis. So we see that the Shechina was originally on the kaporis. Now, dechtiv, v'yukav al-kruv v'yoyv, the pasuk says Hashem, so to speak, rode on a kruv and flew. However, Rashi takes that out, and so does Agoris Habach, because that pasuk has nothing to do with Hashem's withdrawal from the Beis HaMikdash. That pasuk is referring by Yetzias Mitzrayim, where Hashem, so to speak, rushed to save the Jewish people, like Hashem took a kruv, like a person would take a really fast horse and go and fly there. So that's how fast Hashem came to save the Jewish people. So that pasuk Rashi says doesn't belong in our Gemara. Okay. Then it says, "Chvoid al kaseh nala ma'ala kruv asher hoya olav." Yechezkel sees the nevuah, a number of these stages taking place. He says the glory of Hashem nala ma'ala kruv were lifted off the kruv asher hoya olav, which the Shechina had been on that el miftan abayis, and it moved to the threshold of the house, the threshold of the heichal. So we see that at one point, the Shechina was on the Kruv, and from there it moved to the Miftan. Now, how did it get to the Kruv? So that's the first stage, is going from the Kaparis to the Kruv. It also has to be, we can't say that it means the Kruvim on the Aron, first of all, because that's it's again, it's one piece with the Kaparis. But besides that, by Yechezkel's times, when he's saying this Nevuah, the Aron had already been hidden away for 30 years. Yoshiyahu had hid it away 30 years before Yechezkel started his Nevuah. So if he's seeing now that the kruv, that the shchida was on the kruv and then moved from there, it has to mean the large kruv. When we miftan on the chotzer, how do we know from there it moved to the chotzer? Again, another pasuk that Yechezkel describes, "Dechiv by Yimolei Abayis Hasa'anan." He saw another stage of the shchina's withdrawal. The house, the heichal, was full of smoke. V'achotzer molas noga kved Hashem. The chotzer, the azara, was full of the glory of the kavod Hashem of Hashem. So we see that the glory of the Shechina moved to the chotzer. Mechotzer lemizbeach. The next one is to the mizbeach. Dichtiv. Here you have a pasuk from Amos. Now Amos again lived a long time before the Churban, but he's saying, Rashi explains, he's saying menavua that in the future he's saying that Hashem is going to do this. It has to be because there's no reason because he's going to mention Hashem because he says v'hine Hashem ro'isi es Hashem nitzav al mizbeach. I saw Hashem standing on the mizbeach. Now obviously Rashi says it's not going to be that Hashem withdrew to the mizbeach and then in Yechezkel's times came back into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and withdrew from there again. It has to be that you're almost the same in Nevuah that I saw that in the future, a couple of hundred years from now, there's going to be a point where the Shechina is standing on the Mizbeach. So that's the next stage. From there it went to the roof of the Heichal, or as we said, okay, Hagoyes Hagra moves these around a little bit, so the roof was earlier. Dichtiv, that you have a pasuk in Mishlei, the Tov l'Sheves al Pinas Gog, it's better to sit, better and easier to sit on the corner of a roof rather than, as the pasuk continues, with a quarrelsome wife. So the Jewish people are compared to the wife of Hashem. We quarrel and fight with Hashem and bring in a Bodhisattva and do other Averis. So Hashem says, you know what, I'd rather sit on the roof than have to deal with that. Megag l'choyma. From there he goes to the wall of the Azara. Dichtiv, another pasuk from Amos. V'hinei Hashem nitzav al choymas anoch. He says, I saw Hashem standing on a wall of anoch. There's a few different possibilities. What anoch means? It means a broken wall. It means a wall that was made exactly straight and true with a plumb line. Whatever. The point is that he saw Hashem standing on the wall, and that refers now to the wall of the Azara. Again, this is a pasuk from Amos, but he's talking about in the future what Hashem is going to do. From there, Hashem goes. From there, the Shechina goes to the city of Yerushalayim. Another one from an earlier Navi. The Navi Micha says the voice of Hashem calls out to the city. So we see that there's a point when Hashem is in the city, calling out to the people to do tshuva. And we have to keep in mind, you know, all of this is, I mean, on one hand, it's withdrawing from the Beis Mikdash. On the other hand, you know, it's also Hashem is giving them more and more opportunity to do tshuva and like coming closer, bringing the Shechina right there into the city so that they should realize, they should have the sensitivity to realize the Shechina is there and do tshuva. So that's in the city. Umeir Lahar, from the city, it went to the mountain. Dichtiv, again a pasuk from Yechezkel. Vayal kved Hashem me'al toicha'ir. The glory of Hashem lifted off from within the city. Vayamad al ahor Hashem ikedem la'ir. And it stood on the mountain east of the city, Harazesim. Umehar lemidbar. From there, the Shechina went to the midbar. Dichtiv, another pasuk in Mishlei says, Toiv sheves be'eret midbar. Better to sit and to dwell in a desert. And again, it continues. With better than me'eshes midonim, rather than a woman who was quarrelsome. In particular, Rashi says midonim. The pasuk mentions over there, eshes midonim, a base chaver, a quarrelsome woman who has a friend in the house, meaning where they put in an avodah zarah, like as if to be like a colleague to the Shechina. And Hashem says, I can't stand that. So better to be on the roof and better to be in the midbar rather than having to deal with that. So, midbar also the Yoshua and Mekoma, and then from the midbar the Shekhinah went and remained in its place in Shemayim. Again, as we said, because the pasuk says, "Let me go and return to my place." And Rashi quotes the next words of the pasuk, "Adasha Yeshmu," until they feel guilty, until they feel themselves guilty and do tshuva. Until then, the Shekhinah is going to stay in Shemayim. So in this connection, the Gemara says, "Amar Abiyachin, Shisha Chadoshim Nisak v'Shchinah v'Yisrael b'Midbar." For 6 months, the Shchinah remained in the desert for the waiting for the Jewish people. Shema Yachzru b'Tshuva, because maybe during those 6 months they'll finally do Tshuva. Kiven Shalechozru, when they didn't do Tshuva during those 6 months, Amar, then Hashem said, "Kipach Atzmam," let them Kipach literally means like let them blow up or let them be disappointed. In other words, forget about it. Their hope is gone. Shenema, the pasuk says, "Ve'einu Rishoyim Dichlena." The eyes of the Rishoyim fail, like they're looking forward to something happening and it doesn't happen. Umanais Avad Minhem, their refuge is lost from them, meaning the Shekhinah, which would have been their refuge, it would have protected them, is lost from them. V'sikvasem, and their hope, meaning that Yerushalayim is going to be saved, mapach nefesh is going to be a disappointment. So Hashem says, let him be disappointed. Tipach atman, or tipach nafsham. Hagoyis habach changes it to fit with the words of the pasuk. What are those 6 months? Marashar explains that those are the 6 months from when the siege of Yerushalayim began until the walls of Yerushalayim were breached. The siege began on Asar B'Tevis. The walls were breached in the first Korban we talked about previously on Daf Yud Ches, that the walls were breached on test Tammuz by the first Beis Mikdash. So that's 6 months. So during those 6 months, Hashem is hoping that they'll do tshuva, and then when not, then Hashem says, forget about it. They're just going to have to, the Yerushalayim is going to have to be destroyed, and the Beis Mikdash is going to have to be destroyed. It's a little hard to understand because those actually weren't 6 months apart. Those were 2 years and 6 months apart. But maybe Marashah means, in other words, that once it came, that first test Tammuz, and Hashem saw that the Jewish people hadn't done tshuva, and then he decided that's it. Or maybe on the contrary, the last Asar B'Tevis, 2 years after the siege, and they still hadn't done tshuva, then the countdown begins. Anyway. Continues the Gemara, Ukenegdan. Now we said that the Shekhinah went away in 10 stages. Corresponding to that, Golsa Sanhedrin, the Gemara, we said that the Kabbalah, we know that the Sanhedrin moved to 10 different places. What happened? Milishkas Agozes Lachanos. First they were in the Lishkas Agozes, in the Azara, right next to the Azara. From there they moved to Chanos, which is a place on the Harabayis. That was in particular, we're going to talk about on Amud Beis, 40 years before the Korban. Because at that point there were many Rotschim, and the Sanhedrin figured they don't have the ability to judge them anymore. So therefore, like this, if they're not in the Lishkas HaGozes anymore, then they can't. There's no more Din in Nefashos. So that way they're going to leave it up to Hashem to deal with those Rotschim. This is why Marsha points out when you get down to it, the first Beis Mikdash, that Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayis, and Shpichas Damim, there must have been a much bigger problem with Rotschim. So therefore, we can say that the Sanhedrin may well have gone into Golos, into Chanuyas, by the first Beis Mikdash as well. But here we're talking primarily, most of the list we're going to have over here is by the second, is during and after the second Beis Mikdash. So from Lishkas HaGozes to Chanus, that was 40 years before the Korban, Ume Chanus to Yerushalayim, at some point during those 40 years, they moved into the city of Yerushalayim proper, from there to Yavne, because Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai asked, that's Basyanus famously, "Ken li Yavne v'chachameh," he'll give me Yavne and the Chachamim that we should be able to set back up, the Sanhedrin over there. Umi Yavne v'Usha, from there they moved to the city of Usha, which is in the Galil. So Rashi explains the general idea was wherever the Nasi lived is where the Sanhedrin went to. So Rabbi Gamliel originally lived in Yavne. Later on, Rav Gamliel moved to Usha, and therefore the Sanhedrin moved with him. Really, what it was is in those times, this is the few decades after the Korban, the Romans were harassing and persecuting the Jewish people a lot. So there came a point when it wasn't safe to stay in Yavne anymore, and they had to move to Usha, to the Galil, where the Galil was also obviously ruled over by the Romans, but they were less given to harassing them over there. In particular, it seems from various places that the Romans had a policy of trying to keep Jews out of Eretz Yehuda as much as possible, because you have Yerushalayim there and so forth. That was always the main center of Jewish life in Eretz Yisrael. So now the Romans are trying to keep them out of it as much as possible. So they didn't care so much if they're in the Galil, but they didn't want them in Yehuda. Therefore, the Sanhedrin was forced to move to Usha, and Ram Gamliel was there. Then there was a point, though, where they were able to return to Yavne. Rashi explains that was in the times of Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, because we're going to learn tomorrow, about a Rosh Hashanah that took place in Yavne in Reb Shimon ben Gamliel's time. So they moved back to Yavne. Yavne la'Usha, then they had to move back to Usha again. Usha la'Shfaram, from there they moved to Shfaram, another city in the Galil. Shfaram la'Beis Shorim, from there to Beis Shorim, that was in Rebbe's times. Rebbe originally lived in Beis Shorim. Or Beis Shorim with Tzipori, then to Tzipori, because Rebbe's health was bad and they had to move to Tzipori, which is in the mountains, and the climate there was much better for him. Or Tzipori to Tveria. From there they went to Tveria, which was also, Rashi says, within Rebbe's times. In particular, Rashi says in Tveria, they were there in the times of Antoninus. There's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, for example, where Antoninus says to Rebbe, I want to make Tveria free from taxes, and I need to figure out how to get the Roman Senate to agree with it. And Rebbe gives him advice over there. So we see that the Chachamim were in Tveria at that time. So that's the 10th, that's the last place. Or Tveria, Mukam Mikulon, Tveria was the deepest one, meaning Rashi says they were at the deepest, they were at the lowest level then of all the other places where they were. It also means geographically, Tveria is the lowest lying of all these places by the shore of the Kinneret, so below sea level. Shenema v'shafalt me'eretz yaveri. As the pasuk says, you will be low down, you'll speak from the ground. So if the Navi is saying to the Jewish people, there's going to come a point when your glory, the Sanhedrin, is going to be like in the ground, like below sea level. The Gemara says, Rabbi Lazar Omer, Sheish Golias. Rabbi Lazar says it wasn't 10 Golias, it was only 6. Shenemar, ki heishach yigulis from a pasuk, also in Yeshaya. Ki heishach yoshvei marim. Hashem has lowered down those who dwelt in the heights, which means the Sanhedrin, which was originally in Lushkas HaGodis, in the heights of Yerushalayim. Kiryon Nisgava, the exalted city. Yashpilana, he'll lower it down. Yashpila ad eretz, he'll lower it down to the ground. Yagiena ad ofer, he'll bring it down to the dust. So the various expressions in the pasuk, heishach, yashpilana, yashpila, ad eretz, yagiena, ad ofer, is 6, so that represents 6 different places, 6 different journeys that the Sanhedrin had to make. So what now? He's not disagreeing with the historic fact. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden explains, for example, he's taking out, he doesn't include all the moves back and forth between Yavne and Usha and Usha and Yavne and so forth. He collapses all that into one. So that takes out a couple. He doesn't count necessarily the ones in Rebbe's times between Beis Shorim and Tzipori and Tveria. So therefore that brings it down to 6. Rabbi Yechanan says the last place where the Sanhedrin was located was in Tveria. From there, they're going to be redeemed. From this, that they're down in the dust, and then the lowest point, they're going to be redeemed. Shenema, the pasuk says, "Isnari may offer, shake yourself off from the dust, kumi shvi, and sit, and come sit Yerushalayim," meaning that the Jewish people are going to be reestablished from there. The Rambam brings in Hilchos Sanhedrin that what it means is, when the Sanhedrin is reestablished, it will be reestablished in Tveria, and from there, after they sit for a while in Tveria, then they're going to move to the Beis Hamikdash. Mishnah says, "V'amar Rabbi Shua ben Korcha, v'oid zoyz hiskin Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai." We've been talking about all the takanos of Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai. So Rabbi Shua ben Korcha says, "Here's another takana of Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai." Shachfilu roish beistin mechomakim, that even if the roish beistin, the nasi, is someplace else, not in the same place as the beistin. So you would now, we said before, the nasi is the one who says mekodesh, roish beistin omer mekodesh. So the chora then the edim should have to go to wherever he is. No, the takana was shaloyu ha'edim hochan elam kaimavad. The edim should only go to where the rest of the Sanhedrin is sitting, even though the nasi is not there. So they just go there, and the Sanhedrin can be mekadesh without the rosh based in there. The reason for that takana is there were fewer considerations. First of all, after the churban, the nasi has to travel more on behalf of the Jewish people. We find several times, for example, where Rav Gamliel had to travel to Rome to talk with various Roman emperors to help on behalf of the Jewish people. So therefore, you don't want to have the edim have to go all over the place, and they don't know at any given time where the nasi is. Another point is also Doros HaRishonim makes the point that Rav Yechon ben Zakkai himself, after he set up everything in Yavne, he figured, now what's going to happen? He's the Zaken Ador, he's the eldest Talmud Chacham of the generation, he's a Talmud of Hillel and Shammai, he's well over 100 years old by this point. He's going to end up overshadowing the Nasi, Rav Gamliel, who was much younger. So he moved from Yavne and set up in Bror Chayil, in a town nearby. So again, now the idea is, he understands the Rosh Beistin over here to mean the Av Beistin, which Rav Yechon ben Zakkai was. Instead of the Edom having to go to where the Av Beistin is, in this case, in Bror Chayil, not in Yavne, instead he said they should just go to the Mokam Abad, to the place where the Nasi and the rest of the Chachamim are, namely in Yavne. So the Gemara tells in this connection, speaking of following the Nasi or the Av Beistin wherever he goes, Hahi Itza, there was a certain woman, the Azmane Lodina Kameh Da Amema Ben Hardi. She was summoned to a din Torah in front of Amema in the city of Naharda. Also Amema Lamechuzah, but then Amema left Naharda and went to Mechuzah. Like Ozla Basra, and she didn't follow him, even though she was under a summons to come to Amema's base. Kosef Psicha Ilava. So Amema wrote a psicha, which is a shtar of shamta of cherem on her for disobeying the base. What about our mission? That the Edom only have to go to where the Beistin is. So why is she obligated to follow you? You're the Av Beistin, fine. But why is she obligated to follow you to Mechuzah? She should just be able to go to Nahuda, and the rest of the Beistin will judge the case. Amalei, Sameima answers him, Hani Mili L'inyin Edus HaChodesh. That actually only applies as far as Edus HaChodesh, that we have the special takana that they should go to the Mekom Avad. And the reason is, Dim King, and Seisim, Achshivim, Osadlavai, because again, as we've had a couple of times in our Masechta, we don't want to make them trip up in the future. We don't want that, for example, so this is why we said the Edim, we make big parties for them. We said that we do various other things that we don't want to discourage them in the future from coming. They can be Mechal Shabbos to come, even if the moon was clearly visible, etc., etc. We don't want to discourage in the future. We don't want to discourage them from coming. So now, if they have to go wherever the Av Beistin is, or wherever the Nasi is, and they have to go all over the place to find him, then they're going to be discouraged and say, you know what, next time I won't bother. So therefore, that's why Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai made his takana. Aval Hocha, but over here is a different case. After all, the pasuk says Eved Loiva Leish Malva. The Loiva, the borrower, is like a slave to the Malva, the lender. And therefore, if the Malva wants to be judged dafka by me, by a Maimer, wherever I am, then the Loiva, in this case, this woman, is obligated to follow that. And therefore, if she doesn't want to, then we put her in Cheder. Umar says, Tanan Abanan, Ein Koyin, we're talking about various takonas of Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, so let's talk about more of them. Tanan Abanan, Ein Koyinim Rashoin Lalas Pesandaleim Leduchan. The Kohenim are not allowed to duchen wearing sandals, which is why Adayim Azeh, you have when the Kohenim duchen, they take off their shoes. The Gemara in Sota explains the reason behind that. The reason is because what happens, the guy is going to be trying to fix a strap of his shoe may break, and he's going to be trying to fix it. So then he's not going to duchen, and people are going to say, yeah, you know why he's not duchening? Because he's not a real Kohen, Ben Grusha or Ben Chalutza. So therefore no shoes for duchening. And the Gemara says, "V'zu echad m'teisha takonas shehiskin Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai." So this is one of nine takonas that Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai made. So let's go through what are the nine. Shis dahai pirka. So far, we have six in our perek. We have this one that we just said about the koyanim with their shoes. Then we have the first mishnah. We said that they blow shofar in Yavne or any place where they're based in. The third one was that you take lulav for all 7 days everywhere in the world. The fourth one is that Yom Henef, the day they bring the korban omer, is all osur. The fifth one is that the mekabel edus hachodesh kol hayom. The sixth one is the one that we said in our mishnah that the edim go to the mekom avad. So far that's six. The choder the pirka kama. Then we had one in the first parak where We said that originally the Eide Achodesh could be Mechal Shabbos to come to testify in front of Beis Din for any of the months, because they have to know when Rosh Chodesh is in order to bring the Korban. But after the Korban, Rabbi Yechonon Zakkai said to the Chachamim, there's no more Korban, therefore we shouldn't have them be Mechal Shabbos. Only for Nissan and Tishrei, they left the original Dinda Raisa alone for Nissan and Tishrei, because those we said, those we need Rosh Chodesh to be established firmly for those to know when the Yom Tov are. So far we have seven takanas of Rabbi Yechonon Zakkai. The idach. Now what's the eighth one? The Tanya. We learn a brayser. It's gershin is gayer. If a person becomes a ger nowadays. Now when the Beis Hamikdash is standing, the process of gerus includes mila for a man, tvila for a man or a woman, and a korban. So b'zman hazeh there's no korban. So Sorech Shiyafish Roiva Lakinoi, he has to set aside a Roiva, which Rashi says means a quarter of a shekel, a half a dinner, for his pair of birds. A cane means a nest, means a pair of birds. That's the minimum korban that a ger has to bring. A ger can bring an animal as a korban, but he can also be yotze by bringing two birds as an ola. So he has to set aside money for that, because when the Beis Hamikdash is built, he's going to have to bring his korban. Tosfos discusses, does it really mean roiva shekel? Does it mean maybe mean a roiva of a different, rather, does it mean maybe roiva dinner? Whatever, the point is he has to set aside that money for his korban. However, Amar Rav Shimon Elazar, K'van Nimna, Aleha, Rabbi Yechonon, Ubitla, M'pnei HaKala. Rabbi Yechonon, Ben Zakkai, already got together the Chachamim, and they voted to be mevatel that because of the takola, because of the stumbling, because what's going to happen? You're going to have this money around. You may eventually forget that you designated this money for the korban, and then you're going to end up using it. You're going to be doing mila. So therefore, he was mevatel that. And nowadays, a geir does not have to set aside that money. Interesting point that you see that there were enough geirim even after the korban that they had to deal with such takonis. You think about it, at the time after the korban, the Jewish people were at their lowest ebb. You have the Gemara in Gittin tells us there was even a point over there when the Romans had laws that anybody who sees a Jew has to kill him, and afterwards any guy who kills a Jew is only going to have to pay a tiny little fine for zuzim. And yet we see apparently there were enough geirim coming at that time that they had to make such takonis. Okay, so far that's eight takonis of Rabbi Yechonon Zakkai. The idach. Now, what's the ninth one? That is plukta. Did a papa, but Rav Nachman Yitzchok. You have an argument what that ninth one was. Rav Papa, I'm a Kerem Revai. Rav Nachman Yitzchok, I'm a Loshen Shal Zahoris. Rav Papa says it's a takana mentioned in the Mishnah having to do with Kerem Revai, the fourth year after the 3 years of Orla, where you have to take the fruit to Yerushalayim. And Rav Nachman Yitzchok says Loshen Shal Zahoris, the red strip that they would put over there on the sur originally on the door of the Heichel and afterwards on the sur Lazazel. So the Papa on Kerem Revai, the Papa says, what was the takana as far as Kerem Revai that Rabbi Yechonon Ben Zakkai made? The Tanya, or the Tanan, really, it's a Mishnah. Kerem Revai ho Olach Yerushalayim Mahalach Yem Echa B'Chotzav. Kerem Revai, we learned this in Beitza as well. Kerem Revai, for one day's distance in every direction from Yerushalayim, you had to bring the grapes to Yerushalayim. Meaning, if you're any further out than that, or any other fruit, you don't dafka have to bring them to Yerushalayim. You could, like with Ma'aser Sheni, you redeem them for money, you take the money to Yerushalayim, and you use that to buy food. But the Chachamim, at one point, made a takana during the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, that for one day's journey in every direction from Yerushalayim, you have to bring the actual grapes themselves to Yerushalayim. The Zuhi Tchuma, the borders are as follows. Eilas minat sofen va'akravas minat dorim, or you have them in parenthesis because they're really supposed to be the other way around. Lud minat mayr of the Yarden and Mizrach. Lud on the west and the Yarden on the east. So any place within that circle, you have to bring the actual grapes to Yerushalayim. V'oma ula v'itemer rav about ula omer of Yechonon. Matam, what was the reason behind that takana? Today la'ater shuki Yerushalayim aperis. In order to beautify the marketplaces of Yerushalayim with fruit. In other words, that the marketplaces should have lots of grapes in them. You have to remember, in those days, most people pressed grapes to make wine, so they didn't always have a lot of grapes to eat. So therefore, so it was a good thing that you would have grapes in the market. So that was the original Takana, the Tanya. Now we learn in a Braisa, Kerem Revai Hoyle and Rabbi Eliezer, the Mizrach Lud, the Tzad Kvar Tovi. Rabbi Eliezer had a Kerem Revai on the east side of Lud. Now Lud being west of Yerushalayim means the east side of Lud is within that day's journey of Yerushalayim, near Kvar Tovi, Ubikish Rabbi Eliezer, Lachir Lanim. So Rabbi Eliezer didn't want to have the Tircha of dealing with the Kerem Revai and taking the fruit to Yerushalayim. This was already after the Churban. So he didn't want to bother. So he just wanted to be makirit for the poor people, and let the poor people do with it whatever. Tosfos explains, okay, maybe the poor people would also have to be mechalalit, but fine, the poor people at least could be mechalalit. They don't need the full value. They could take a large amount of grapes, be mechalalit on a pruta, and that would be fine because anyway, there's no anyway you can't bring it to your shalayim now. So he wanted to do that. Omrulay tamida, but Rabbi Eliezer's tamidim told him, Rebbe. Your colleagues have already voted about that and will matter it that now you don't have to bring the fruit to your shalayim. So the Papa says, Man chaverecha, Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai. So who do they mean? By your colleagues, they mean Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai. We're going to ask soon, one second, Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai was Rabbi Eliezer's Rebbe. What do you mean his colleagues? But that's what Papa says. That was the ninth takana of Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai. Rabbi Nachman Yitzchok, I'm a Loshon Shel Zehoris. Rabbi Nachman Yitzchok says the ninth takana was the one about the strip of red wool. Titania, but Rishona Hoya Kosher and Washing Shalahodas are Pesach Ulam in Bachutz. Originally, they would tie the red string on Yom Kippur on the outside of the door of the Ulam. Hilbin Hoya Snechen, and if it turned white after they threw the Sorel Azazel off the cliff, then everybody was happy. Loy Hilbin Hoya Azazel, and if it didn't turn white, then they were all sad because it showed Hashem didn't forgive their Averis. His skin or she or Kosher is our Pesach Ulam in Bachutz. So they made a takana that they should tie it on the inside of the Ulam. Still, people would peek in behind the door and they could see it. Hilben Hoyu Smechen, and if it turned white, they're happy that Hashem forgave their Averis. Loy Hilben Hoyu Atsevin. His skinu, so they made a takana. That the guy who takes the Sora Lazazel should take the script with him and tie half of it to a rock there and half of it to the head of the Sora Lazazel. And that way, the only one who sees it is him, and that way everybody else is not upset. So that takana was saying Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai. Okay, so the Gemara says Rabbi Nachman ben Yitzchok my time alay omer to Rav Papa. So why does Rabbi Nachman ben Yitzchok disagree with Rav Papa? Why doesn't he like the explanation that it was the takana about Kerem Revai? Omalach, so they'll tell you, Isak Dadach Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, if Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai made that takana, what do you mean, Chaver of Rabbi Eliezer? Mihava. He wasn't Rabbi Eliezer's Chaver, that his Talmidim are telling him, your Chaverim made this takana. Rabbi Yehava. He was Rabbi Eliezer's Rebbe. So therefore, that shows it wasn't Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai's takana. The Idach, now Rav Papa would answer to that. That's not a problem. Given the Talmidim Havu, since they were Rabbi Eliezer's Talmidim, Lav Oirach Aro, Lamemrele, Rabbi Rabba. They figured it's not Derech Eretz to speak to their Rebbe and speak of your Rebbe, like as if you were Talmud like us. So therefore, they spoke of Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai as his Chaverim, but everybody understood what they meant. So therefore, Rav Papa says it could still be a takana of Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai. Next, Rav Papa, my time alay omer k'Rav Nachman Yitzchok. Why doesn't Rav Papa agree that the takana about the strip of red wool is from Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai? So omer loch, he'll tell you like this: Isak da'edach Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai. If it was Rabbi, how could it be Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai? Be made Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai me have a washing shal zahodes during his time? Did the strip of red wool b'chalal ever turn white? Well, Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai lived 120 years in total. Mem shana osek v'prak matya. During the first 40 years, he engaged in business. He was learning Torah during that time, obviously, but he was working for his parnasa. Mem shana lomad. For the next 40 years, he learned Torah exclusively. Mem shana limit. And for the next 40 years, he taught the Jewish people Torah. The Tanya. Now we learn in another braisa. Mem shana. For the last 40 years before the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, the strip of red wool would not turn white, it would stay red. Now, so you're going to say, okay, so as soon as Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai started teaching, as soon as he was a member of the Sanhedrin, is about the same time. So there was a little bit of time in between. But no, we had the various takonis that Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai made after the Churban. So necessarily, therefore, Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai lived at least, Rashi says, at least a year or two after the Churban, maybe more. So therefore, so if 40 years before the Churban, it stopped turning, those 40 years are still during the 40 years when Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai is still learning from his Rebbeim, when he's not yet teaching Torah to the people. So how is he already making takanas? The answer is, you could say Talmud Yoshev Lifnei Rabbi Abba. He was a Talmud at that time, while the strip of red wool was sometimes still turning white. He was a Talmud sitting in front of his Rebbe, but Omar Milsa, so he said something that, you know, we should stop putting it on the door of the Heichel because everybody's getting upset. The Istaber Taimei, his Rebbeim liked what he said. They approved of what he said. But Kabe, Rabbi Mishnei, so his Rebbe made the Takana in his name. In other words, they said that we can say that we're going to call this the Takana of Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, even though he's not actually the Av Beis Din yet, or the Nasi, or whatever it is, to be able to make Takanas. But because he said something very logical, we, the Nasi and the Av Beis Din and the Sanhedrin of the time, are going to make this Takana and attribute it to Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, who came up with the idea. Therefore, Rav Nachum Yitzchok says that one can be counted as the ninth takana of Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai.
Yeshikayach.